Hello, my name is Jinyu Gamage. I'm a senior at Cheltenham High School. I'm going to attend Bloomsburg University in the fall of 2019. And for my capstone project is I want to do an interview of the special education teachers at my school because that is the major I'm going into when attending Bloomsburg. So I wanted to get more knowledge and information to help prepare me, get ideas on why special education is important and what made them decide. All right, so why don't you tell me your name and how many years have you worked at Cheltenham?
Okay, I'm Vonnie Gillick, and this is the end of my seventh year in Cheltenham School District.
All right, so what made you want to work in special education?
Actually, originally I did not want to work in special education. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to be a teacher, and I started off in elementary education. I didn't think I wanted to teach anybody older than second grade until I got a teacher's assistant position mm-hmm. in sixth grade, and I enjoyed working with the older students. Then I had an opportunity to work in a high school with emotional support students as a instructional aide. And during that time, I realized that I really enjoyed working with students with special needs and decided to go back to school to be a special education teacher. And then once I got a permanent teaching position in special education, I kind of I took advantage of ESY opportunities.
And do you know what ESY is?
ESY is extended school year.
Okay.
So for students with severe disabilities who regress significantly over a break in their education, it's a long break in education, it takes them longer to recover mm-hmm. their skills as a result of that break. So that's why they participate in extended school year, so they're continually practicing and reinforcing their skills.
Oh, that's good.
So they don't lose skills.
Yeah.
So when I had an opportunity to be a teacher for extended school year or ESY, that's where I really decided I enjoyed working with students who weren't as capable as some of the other students. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really awesome. What made you? What's the most fun part about working with in special education?
I love having the opportunity to be creative, creating lessons, developing lessons, taking ideas, and kind of growing with them. So the more time you spend with students, the more you realize. As you get to know students, you realize where their downfalls are, mm-hmm. which then presents teachable moments. And it's taking those teachable moments, inputting your creativity, and then making something happen that's going to be meaningful to them, getting them to enjoy the love of learning, as well as accepting the challenge, and hopefully gaining the skills they need to be
mm-hmm. And also successful. You can just it's not like they're moving grade by grade. They just stay there, but also you're able to actually see them improve throughout the years. This is what you did. You can just see
yes.
that. I really can't wait.
It's really, really rewarding.
Somehow. It's exactly. The effect and the progress that you help them with mm-hmm. it. They're eternally grateful for that.
Yes, that's the other thing. Before being in the Skills for Life program mm-hmm. and being out in the learning support community, you have this opportunity to have an impact on a student's life, but you never expect, or you never know what that impact
yeah.
is going to be and the outcome it'll have in the long term. You also can't predict who it is that you're going to have an impact on, and it's always the student you least expect. So that's rewarding.
It's inspiring. Oh,
totally. It's what keeps you going. It's those moments that keep you going. Because sometimes teaching can be a little overwhelming and very stressful.
You have to have a lot of patience. I'm not I'm not a patient person myself. Just anywhere else, but I don't just want to work with students.
Yeah.
I'm
the same way. I'm not patient outside of the classroom, but for some reason when I'm here.
You have all the time in the world, but you also know the progress that you're
yep.
you're contributing to.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely rewarding.
So what's the most challenging part about working with the students?
Working with students who don't want to learn is extremely frustrating and can be disheartening.
Yeah.
You know, when you work with students who don't want to be there and who don't care and who don't, like, that's really hard. And it's hard to find a way to tap into that, to find that hook to get them in. And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't, but it's frustrating. And also working with students with special needs, it's hard. Sometimes it's like frustrating because you want to help them, but you don't know how. You're kind of like hit this brick wall and you're like, all right, I've tried all these things. I'm out of, like, I don't know where to go from here. I don't know what to do next. Or sometimes, especially in the Skills for Life program, sometimes you have days where the kids are totally on point and they're getting it and they're making progress and all these great things. And then the next day you get there and it's like they've never seen it before.
They don't remember.
They don't remember, or they forget. Or so sometimes that's just like frustrating because sometimes you feel like you're a hamster on a wheel.
Yeah.
You know, but the most challenging is being able to find that hook and to keep children wanting to learn and develop. Exactly. School's hard. Mm-hmm. You know, so nobody wants to do something that's difficult, right?
Mm-hmm. So I think even, like, I guess with the student, like, that has special needs and stuff like that, it's hard for them personally to believe in themselves that they can actually do it, because they, like, they know, like, they have an idea, like, they struggle with things. And
they know they're different.
Yeah, they do, and that might just also prevent them from, like, wanting to, like, oh, I don't
take
think
risks.
I can do it. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, again, I think it's also the patience, too, definitely.
Right. Right, they need patience as well because
they get mad.
It's got to be
frustrated at themselves all the time. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
But you know, they like, they know more than they think they do, and
a
it's actually it's
time.
Impressive. Like on the, how, that you can see that as well. Like
right.
It's like you know this. Like.
Yeah. It's also
good
fun.
Afternoon, Cheltenham teachers, please pardon the interruption for brief afternoon announcement. On Friday, May 17th,
okay,
Monday,
can you
talk? May 20th,
okay.
The following homeroom should.
So what do you do, like, when a student, like, misbehaves and, like, kind of just kind of acting up, like, maybe partially due to their condition or just in general when they really aren't cooperating that day?
Usually when a student is acting out, there's an underlying reason.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always know what that is. But as a teacher, you have to take all the options into account. Did something happen at home? Did something happen on the bus? Is there something that's happening after school or coming up? A lot of students struggle with a change in routine. So if there's a change in the schedule, like we've had the last week.
Exactly.
If students have like a spring break or a long weekend, that change in routine is something really challenging. So when a child misbehaves, listen, we're like, even as adults, you have good days and bad days.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, we've got to give students the freedom to be able to express that and to have an outlet. And it's our job to teach them appropriate coping skills. Like, you're allowed to be angry, you're allowed to be mad, you're allowed to have a bad day, you're allowed to be upset. But how you respond
mm-hmm.
and exert those feelings is what you have to work on, you know, so it's trying to figure out what it is.
It's also like, you know, behavioral management skills.
Exactly. Coping,
I think,
self-control,
yeah.
Which we've been talking about in social skills. What does that mean, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly, I think that's like a new program what I'm going into Bloomsburg for. It's like they're providing that new, like, class, so I'm very
mm-hmm.
interested in, like, learning as to why and, like, the types
behavior
of, like, behavior that they, like, put out explains probably why they're, you know.
And some of it is just out of their control.
Yeah, of
course.
You
know, they want to be good. They want to make the right choices. They want to please you.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes chemically things get in the way. Distractions get in the way. Or it's like they know right from wrong, but the impulse of doing something or the result of, like, the fantasy of the result of what would happen if they did do something is far greater than their ability to control it.
Yeah.
And that's really challenging
mm-hmm.
for some students.
Sebastian, what you were saying about, like, routine and stuff, like, I think repetition is actually a very important thing that you guys do here, and I've, like, noticed, and I think it's also, like, you know, that's just how they learn as well. Like,
yep.
When I'm like that, too, like, repeating off this, like, same schedule and stuff, or, like, saying, like, routine, daily routines and stuff. I think that's, like, a really great way of just, like, teaching things in general.
Students,
but, I mean, their brain is, like, they know what to do, the patterns, and
exactly.
They learn patterns.
Children in general, whether it's children in a general education program or children in a special needs program, even adults, they tend to do, most people to do best when the environment is predictable. Mm-hmm. When they walk into the room and they know what to expect from the adult, from the learning environment, from the students, then you're going to get the best results. But if somebody walks in and it's chaotic and everything's a free-for-all and it's unstructured, and I mean, some teachers have those kinds of classrooms and can do really well in that environment that's like, you know, this organized sense of chaos. That works in some classrooms and that works for some kids. But I would say, generally speaking, most children, students, and adults work better in a
routine, structured,
predictable learning environment. Yeah,
yeah, that's very true. Let's see. So what are, like, I guess, more specific things that, I guess, a special ed teacher kind of, like, focuses on than what a normal, like, math teacher or English teacher does, and, like, how, I guess, how you guys teach compared to them?
So our goal as special education teachers is always to level the playing field for the students with the difficulties and challenges. So the idea is to help them. They know they have a shortcoming of some kind. They know that school's difficult for them. They might not know why. They might not know that they can't read or numbers don't make sense to them. They don't know that stuff always. But it's our job as teachers to take those discrepancies and help them develop the skills to approach those challenges. Mm-hmm. So it's really about leveling the playing field. We want them to be performing at the same level as their peers, their grade level peers, and their peers in general. But how do we do that? So our job is to figure that out. How do we give them the skills they need so they can participate in the same things as their peers?
Yeah, like, you really have to kind of depict the smallest things, like the smallest skills that they, like, you know, you would normally think it would be just simple, just like easy as opening a door or tying your shoe. That's
right.
A skill, but that's, again, those are very important skills, but sometimes you have to take more time on that.
Mm-hmm. And also taking the things that they can do and and challenging those, mm-hmm. right? So the things to not always, it's a tough balance between focusing on what they need and can't really do versus what they can do and then build on that. Okay. So if a student is really good at tying their shoes, then what job can we give them that incorporates that, mm-hmm. right? Where they get an opportunity to show off those skills and to feel like they've accomplished something that's easy for them. So something that they're good at, mm-hmm. you know?
Like, so they can get that confidence.
Exactly. Taking the things that they can do and celebrating those while taking the things that they can't do and developing coping skills towards moving to things they mm-hmm. can do.
And then I have one more question for you.
Sure.
So what advice do you guys have for me later on when going into college and stuff, preparing, and then later on student teaching possibly when I go?
Key is organization, planning, and expect the unexpected. So, like, definitely organization is key. Write everything down. Okay. Keep a calendar. Make checklists. Anything where checklists are good, organizations, anything, you know, make folders. Have some kind of system, especially if you're going in the field of special ed, you have deadlines that are not flexible.
Really?
You're dealing with legal documents. So if something is due on May 1st, that's the deadline. There is no flexibility with that.
Yeah.
You can do it before, but doing after is not an option. Mm. So if it's something that happens in February, if something's due in the middle of February, you have to take into account that there could be a snow day.
Yeah.
Or there could be, so planning ahead, getting an overview of your year, plugging in things where you can as soon as you can is definitely key. So I would say organization, planning, and just
realization is a big thing for me. I mean,
yeah.
I just need to get better at that myself, but, you know, just getting that calendar, I think, like, the new environmental change for me also is where I can actually just start right off that as well.
Make lists. Because sometimes there, you have things that are thrown at you that you don't expect, you know, and you got to fit those things over and above your daily routine, and those things have deadlines, and sometimes it gets lost in the shuffle. So having checklists when you're feeling overwhelmed, make a list of priorities. Like, okay, I need to do this, 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 and this, and this now, and get it off my plate.
Sounds exactly like
this is what I have to take care of in the next week. This is what I have to take care of in the next month, and just start hammering out your list. Because otherwise you forget. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's silly stuff, like email the nurse or email this parent or make sure you sign this document or get this person's signature. And, you know, there's a lot of like nitty, like small details.
Thing, but also like it can definitely
that have the biggest impact. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for doing this with me. I really appreciated like the time that you've let me spend here and work with the students, and I've learned so much throughout like the past couple of years watching just starting from the 8th grade, mm-hmm. watching now, and just meeting a bunch of new students as well.
Right, it's and being a part of the behind the scenes, right?
Yeah, and then even like helping out Mr. Cohen with math problems or individual help.
Yeah.
And I can get to like personally interact like with each student on like
build a rapport.
Yeah, I can like learn like.
That's another thing that's really, really important when in special ed is building a rapport with your families, the families you work with.
Oh, yeah.
Because you, along with their parents, are their biggest advocate, and sometimes you're their only advocate.
Yeah.
And so get to know your students well, get to know your cases well, and build a relationship with those families.
The family, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, even, like, when I was little, I was, I guess, a very attached, like, child. But, you know, I love my teachers. I was like, oh, my God, like, you're, like, another parent to me at some point. Because the mm-hmm. majority of your life is in school. And you just Correct. See them every day. And, like, yeah, they see you every single day. They don't switch classes often as Right. well. So, like, you are just there.
Yeah.
24/7.
Yeah. So, and being able to be that person for that student, sometimes you're the only constant in their life, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they need you more than, you know, you yeah. think, so... That's awesome. But I wish you the best of luck. I think you're going to be awesome.
Thank you so much.
You know, if you
much.
Have any questions or whatever, shoot an email. You can always be in touch. We're happy to share our resources.
Wonderful.
You know, teaching's a family, takes a village, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Thank you so much. You are so welcome.
All right, so why don't you tell me your name and also how long you've worked at Cheltenham High School?
My name is Philip Cohen, and this is my 10th year at Cheltenham High School.
So what made you want to work in special education? What was, like, the start?
So my first job was in a retirement home in a nursing center, and I was a dietary aide. So I'd bring food down to the kitchen and bring it to the residents in the nursing center. I'd have to cut up the food, feed them, clean up, and set up the food for the next meal, and sometimes do breakfast, lunch, and dinner on some days, and some days just dinner, like, when it was after school, so... started that when I started 10th grade. What I realized was I was very patient with the residents and formed strong bonds with them and their families. And I would even come in on my days off, like play bingo with them, sometimes take them out in the community. I felt like I had such a strong bond and great relationship.
Yeah. You found it fun. Like, you found this enjoyable.
You would think that, like, in the nursing center, I would understand that most of them, even if they look okay, like, that's probably their last stage of life, and they're going to pass away. And I was there for 6 years, loved it, but I could never get over when they would pass away.
Oh, yeah.
And so I realized, I was thinking about, well, originally I wanted to be a sports broadcaster, but then I thought about social work.
Mm-hmm.
But social work doesn't really pay as well, and there's a lot of other challenges within that. Being a teacher, I think, in the special needs areas seemed appealing to me because I wanted to work with younger people. And I felt if I can make a difference in the elderly people's lives later in life, if I could get people earlier in life.
You can see the progress.
Exactly. And then they could take some of the things that they've learned and apply it later on. Whereas it's not like, and I feel like there's more of a purpose with teaching. Whereas in social work, of course, there's a huge purpose, but I want them to be able to do things as independently as possible and build confidence and help people do things that they maybe thought they couldn't do before.
Yeah, and I think, like, knowing that, like, you know, when starting early, you get to see progress, and then that's your reward right there, mm-hmm. I think. And, you know, you spend so much time with the students, and you, like, create a bond, you get to know the parents and everything, and it's a lot of time, but also, like, do you think it's really worth it?
I think it's the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially in life skills. Like, I loved my other position that I was in. I was the special education teacher in the chemistry department for 7 years, and I loved it. But I didn't go to school for chemistry. I wasn't really trained in that. I kind of had to learn, like, one step ahead of the students my first couple years of doing that. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, a learning support setting. My dream is to be, like, an elementary school teacher or, like, a life skills teacher, autistic support teacher. Okay. So when this opening happened, even though I was upset to lose the teacher that was here, it was one of the greatest opportunities I've ever had. And it rejuvenated me as an educator. And for teaching, every, like, 10 years or so, I want to do something different. So I did, like, 7 years in chemistry, and now I want to do, you know, life skills for a while, and then I'll want to do, you know, something else. And constantly, well, not constantly, but every, you know, periodically change it up to keep myself fresh and to also reach a different population as well.
It's great. So you're just, like, making yourself very, like, diverse and, like, all the mm-hmm. type of environments and communities and with different people of different ages, like, you know, with different, like, skill levels. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, really, really amazing. I think that's also what I want to do as well. I think I want to, you know, go into special education, go there for the 4 years, and then, like, you know, student teach, get a job, internship, and then also maybe, like, get into speech pathology to get more specific mm-hmm. and individual work, as well as, like, even just get a master's in counseling.
At this time, we're conducting a hall clearing. Each teacher is at their door. Please close and secure your doors. Any scholars are in the hallway. Whether you have a pass or not, report to Stretch Hall at this time. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, so, like, you know, get a master's in, like, school counseling, and you still, like, talk to the student individually, but also, like, just figure out and help them get through. You're still making an impact mm-hmm. and being part of that support system for them. So what is the most fun part about being a teacher?
The most fun part about being a teacher is interacting with the students every day, building a professional working relationship. I feel that when someone comes to you and are genuinely proud of what they can do, whether or not it's a surprise or not to them, which I would hope it's not a surprise, to me, that makes everything go away. You could give me the most challenging IEP paperwork and other stuff there, but then, you know, and I'm working on that, and then class starts, and then you start the dialogue and start the lesson, and then get the feedback from the students. That literally makes everything go away, any kind of stresses, and it just feels like I'm in my element. And that's just a personal goal of mine, is just to kind of be in the moment while teaching and to focus on my students' ideas, thoughts, wishes. Of course, there's a certain way the lesson has to go. I get mm-hmm. that. But I always try to give them their outlet. And I'm really focusing on that. And it's different for each student, especially in life skills. Mm-hmm. So.
With, like, working with students, like, with disabilities and stuff like that, there comes, like, a lot of patience again, because, like, you know, the way they learn isn't, like, as quick as, like, other people can be sometimes, and they know, like, they're a bit different than others as well, so it can be harder for them to even, like, believe in themselves so they can do the work. How do you cope with that? How do you, like, manage your patience here with, like...
So... I feel that, and this is not, like, in a conceited way, like, I think a special education teacher that's really trained well is a master of teaching. So if that person understands the basic steps of any type of skill, they can teach it. And if you're able to teach it to yourself, then you're able to teach it. But with, the students that I have, some of them need pictures with it. Some of them need videos. I had a student that had to videotape herself doing all the skills and looking at it, and now she doesn't even need it anymore. It took about half a year, mm-hmm. and anytime there's a new skill, we did. So it's been time and time again using Velcro with steps and then plugging that in and putting it in an appropriate order and then doing it. There's so many other ways that I want to, like, just like with cutting food and cutting dishes that you're, you know, making there, to foster more independence, to use the real equipment that we have, there's ways to lead up to it. So back to your question of how do you do, basically it's just knowing where each student is at and then trying to push them to that zone of proximal development. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that? Where it's like slightly above where they, right. So many times we look at like reading, math, and writing levels. And yes, those skills are so important, but it's transferable skills to, is this with cooking? Is this with cleaning? Is this with the job? Whatever that is there. And we're actually practicing those skills. So mm-hmm. I am very concerned with the reading, writing, and math, but I'm also concerned with that application and seeing that there. And what I've seen, which has completely surprised me, which I did not see in chemistry or any other place I've been at, is even if somebody is almost like a non-reader, they're able to do skills within the kitchen. We have one working in the cafeteria right now who's doing amazing, making pizzas and setting up dishes and everything with the cafeteria workers. And
do it.
Well, but this person's able to pick up on these things quickly and efficiently. But if you put a textbook in front of them, and it's all about the context. And another thing that I truly believe is related to it with the drill and practice, there's a lot of muscle memory things. So the bodies and the kinesthetic hands-on piece too. Transfer to brain retrieval and word retrieval, and you know, to have them actually doing the hands-on activities is huge. And I knew that, like, I studied that, but to actually be in there and to see the difference, that's huge. Then there's also some kids that are on a college track here, because there's college certificate programs. Currently, there's 11 in the state of Pennsylvania. Okay. But they require a third grade reading, writing, math level, and it's very selective programs. So for them, I'm trying to push them a little bit more. Yes, they have to do the hands-on, and yes, but also that's a little bit more academic. So it's a juggle.
Yeah, it's like a whole like balance.
And then communication is the number one thing with parents, with supports coordinators, with outside agencies, with community supports that are right here that are going to help us. That is the biggest thing, because there's so many people that want to help. There's so many people that are on a student's team for when they exit high school that are going to be there, and you want to make sure that, that there's a bridge between what we do here and it's connected to what supports that they're going to get and the funding they're going to get. Mm-hmm. And we're constantly working together with those people. And if we change something here, we got to update them. If they change something there, they got to update us, because then we might need to do a revision or tweak something to see, you know, what's applicable. Because they're going to be entitled to services, but the laws are completely different when mm-hmm. you're outside of IDEA and when you exit high school. So you're entitled for reasonable accommodations there, and it's more of a fight to make sure that you've been using these over time. Mm-hmm. And if there's no record of that, or a weak record of that, they'll be denied services, and that could come back on the school and the family.
It takes a village. You know?
Yeah, it does. It truly does.
So what do you do, like, when you're in a classroom, students kind of misbehaving, doesn't want to learn, or just they're kind of like not cooperating?
For me, it goes back to the personal relationships, the professional relationships with students. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do I ever have a student, and this goes back to the chemistry days. My whole time here, if it's a student I have in class, we don't have an issue. I'm usually able to handle it in-house, talk to parents. I think I've written, and this is all my time here, I think 3 detentions or 3 write-ups total for everything. And I think one was just someone that never showed up. So I don't have to worry about that in life skills.
Yeah.
But there are sometimes disciplinary issues or things that come up, and there's teachable moments. But if it's somebody that I know and that I've had in class, it's always handled in-house. It's about respect. It's about I treat you like I want to be treated. I expect you to treat me like I want to be treated. I'm a professional. You need to be professional. This is your workplace right now. Mm-hmm. So you have to be responsible for that. And if you're not, then we have a problem, and then, you know, I have to be the boss in that respect, but I'm trying to help them govern themselves too, where I could just give a look or give a clue or a prompt without explicitly saying what I need done, mm-hmm. because I expect that they know it. And that's key in life skills, because to see if they could self-correct. If they're not getting it, I have to explicitly say it. But it's been pretty good with that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, so they're pretty good to you, huh?
Yeah.
So what are things that, like, I guess that is most, I guess, different from, like, regular teaching, like an English class and, like, or a math class or any like simple things instead of just one subject? What's, like,
differentiated?
Teaching like this type of skills and stuff, or like how you teach, like what's...
So for life skills, I created it's about 20 different skills for independent living and transfer to vocational jobs, and it's breaking it down step by step. And last year, I actually, with the equipment that we have in this new apartment, created this with the students, mm-hmm. and tried to, you know, it was a lot of work to do that, but I wanted to do it. And if our equipment changes for something, then we have to adjust it, right? But there's that, and it's every step trying to see. I do if they're doing it independently, it's a plus. If they could do it with prompting, check mark, and then you document the type of prompting, most restrictive to least restrictive prompting. And then if they can't do it, it's a minus sign, and then we revisit that. And these things are communicated with the families. Yeah, it's very, very important to do that. The other aspect of it is within here, I mean, Miss Gillick and I, for the first time ever, she took, like, kind of the lower-level readers, and I had the higher-level readers. Mm-hmm. My higher-level readers are grades, reading levels 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, first grade through fifth grade. That's a huge difference. So, I mean, there's a couple kids that have pictures to go with the words. Some kids don't have pictures to go with the words. Are we keep going, or do you have
to...
Yeah,
just finish the question,
yeah.
And then we'll probably have to cut it off. I do have to...
Yeah. So it's making sure that, you know, students are challenged at their zone of proximal development, but they also need to be able to access the material. So here, if we have somebody that's a very low reader, we do drone practice for sight words, we do phonics instruction. But when we're actually trying to learn concepts, I need to find other ways other than just reading and listening to get the skill across. Yes. So by acting it out, by modeling it, by trying to get them to feel the moment that the literature is presenting, that is huge. Yeah. Because they could absolutely feel that. And if I could relate that to them, then they're able to connect with the content. And I think that is very, very important as well.
I think feelings, yeah. like, involved, you know, like, oh, what it feels like to do this, and I think that's, like, the most, like, I think a really important thing, and also just, like, how you can also understand what each student kind of, like, is dealing with as well. I think that's also personally why I'm somehow able to, like, work with them easier. I mm-hmm. could, like, have more patience with them, and just, like, because I grew up, like, differently as well, just being, like, adopted, and then, brought to a completely new environment. Mm-hmm. It took me, like, I guess a bit longer to develop at some points, but, like, I just like, I remember just, like, when starting in eighth grade, I remember, like, oh, I can really communicate as well. Mm-hmm. Well, not in eighth grade, but when I was started working with the life skills, you know, I remember, oh, I was little, I couldn't communicate. I could just, like, feel mm-hmm. how, like, have the empathy and how they were feeling, and, like, how sometimes it can be hard to communicate or, like, remember how I felt, so I just passed on what I did to them, and I think it mm-hmm. could work sometimes.
I think self-advocacy mm-hmm. and learning how to do it, when, who to communicate with, how, that's the most important skill for all of the students in life skills or not life skills. And also empathy. Mm-hmm. And I think understanding situations, and we'll constantly talk about, like, if you see someone acting this way, how are you going to approach them? What are you going to do? And there's a difference between if that's a significant other, if that's a family member or a good friend or a coworker, but you still need to be there and read those signals. And in life skills, we also have a number of students that are on the spectrum for autism, different levels, mm-hmm. you know, of it, but they're all learning how to, put themselves in other people's shoes and also treat others like they want to be treated. They want more than anything to be nice, to be loved, to be a hard worker, to be accepted, to have the life that everybody wants to have, and to be taken seriously, and we want the program to be taken seriously, and these students, I mean, they have so much to offer the world. I've seen every single one that I've encountered. I see where they can soar in specific areas that they not only would just be working somewhere and producing, but they would be an asset to it. And I think the thing is, everybody on their team has to believe that. That person has to believe that. They have to have the right personnel. And I think the one thing is just like, you know, as a teacher, you're just one person of that team.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes that's one of the challenging things. If, you know, I try to do everything I can, and then after our services are over after high school, I mean, I always, you know, if it's a good professional relationship, they have my email, phone number, that kind of thing, and we try to keep in touch, you know, with the family support. But I mean, I don't have the services at the school anymore. It's not, but more of like a guidance and to try to see, you know, where they're going. Yeah, but
you're a very important part of their life. Like, you see them every day. It's not like they switch in and out of classes with different teachers. Like, you are there like 24/7, like the same, you know, repetition as well with that. Yeah, we do have to wrap up.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate
the time you've
taught me, helped me out with, even especially
you're
last
an asset.
Year as well.
You're going to be
really
special
it.
No matter what you do.
Yeah, so thank you so much.